Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, we learn more about Issue 75 on your November Columbus ballot. The Columbus Schools combined levy and bond issue. Voters are being asked to approve an operating levy that would be used to restore teaching positions previously cut, to add an hour to middle school and high school instructional days, among other things. And in the same Issue 75, voters are being asked to approve a bond issue to finance replacing an aging bus fleet, renovate schools, other issues. Now, this combined levy and bond issue would cost the owner of a $100,000 assessed house $275 extra per year. We'll find out more about Issue 75, the Columbus Public Schools combined operating levy and bond issue. Back with us, Columbus School Superintendent Dr. Jean Harris. Welcome back.
Thank you, Fred. It's great to be here.
And we're at 614-292-8513, open line at WOSU.org for emails. We want to mention Dr. Harris is here speaking for the levy. There's no levy opponent on the show because we've not identified any organized community opposition to the levy. Of course, you're free to call in either pro or con or with questions on the levy at 614-292-8513. So, Dr. Harris, it's a one yes or no vote to pass or fail both the operating levy and a bond, 7.85 mils for the levy, 1.13 mils for the bond, for a total of 8.98 mils. So.
That's true. And that 1.13 for the capital or the bond issue is really, it's no additional dollars out of the homeowner's pocket. What we're really asking for that portion is that the homeowner would allow us to maintain the collections as they are right now, so that we can generate additional money on the bond portion that would allow us to replace half our bus fleet, to replace textbooks, new technology in the classroom. The average age of a computer in Columbus City Schools is 7 years old, as well as continue our building program.
Let me just to be help us out here. The $275 per year for a $100,000 assessed house, that is an increase over what that person is paying now. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the operating levy, first of all, explain exactly what an operating levy is, if you would, Dr. Harris, and it's a permanent levy. It won't go away. And why do we need such a levy?
Yes, it's what we call a continuing levy. And what an operating levy does is allow us to do just what the word says, continue our operations. It pays for teachers. It pays for professional development. It allows us to maintain our buildings, the maintenance on our buildings. It pays for our staff that are working with our children, our instructional aides, our principals, our teachers, all of those individuals. It pays utilities. It pays for gas. And one of the reasons that we need that is, like all folks, our expenses go up. Obviously, we're paying more for utilities. Now, we bulk buy, and we try to get the best buy. We bulk buy gasoline, utilities, all of those kinds of things, but the costs still go up. We want to be as competitive as we possibly can to get the most highly qualified teachers that we can in the buildings with our children. So, obviously, we're trying to be competitive with our salaries. But in a word, an operating levy allows us to continue to operate the district, to pay for those goods and services that we need for our children to make sure that we can provide this world-class education.
Even if the levy passes, you're going to have to make cuts.
That's absolutely
true, Fred.
And pretty
quickly.
Yes, that's right. Even if the levy passes, and we've been tightening our belts, you know, even over the life of the last levy. Last levy we passed was in 2004. We've cut over $100 million over projected growth during that time. So we've eliminated 1,000 positions, over 1,000 positions. We've closed 21 buildings. We know that we have to continue to make sure that our operating expenses are in line with our student enrollment. So for this levy, when this levy passes, we still will have to cut over the next 4 years about $76 million from the budget.
The Columbus Dispatch reported the owner of a $100,000 assessed home is already paying $992 per year. This will be an additional $275.
Which is about $23 a month.
$23 a month, all right.
Mm-hmm.
When you Teacher positions are going to have to be cut here regardless if the levy passes?
Well, we don't know that they're teacher positions. What we're trying to do is do everything that we can to preserve the classroom and our instructional program. We're really looking at operational areas like workers' comp and some other operational areas to affect some savings so that we don't have to touch the classroom as much. Now, one of the things we will have to do, because we have new graduation requirements that are coming online from the state, is we will have to look at the programs that are less effective and those that really help us get to the ultimate goal, which is graduation and making sure that our students can be successful. And in that case, when we find that we've got less effective programs, then, yeah, we may see some cuts to classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Now, if the levy doesn't pass.
If the levy doesn't pass, I don't like to talk about it, but obviously we have to. But if the levy doesn't pass, we will have to reduce $35 million, not for this fiscal year. You know, we've got our budget plan through the end of this fiscal year, so through June 30th. But beginning July 1 for next fiscal year, we'll have to cut $35 million from the budget. So it's $76 million over 4 years, or it's $35 million immediately if the levy doesn't pass. And that number would only go up for as long as we're not successful with the levy.
If you're not successful and you have to make those immediate cuts, I mean, where are you going to find that?
Yeah, you know, obviously we would have to look at reorganizing the district and, you know, closing buildings immediately. It would certainly impact staff immediately. It would impact our class sizes. One of the things we're trying to do with the levy is lower class sizes in grades K through 3. Without a levy, you know, we would certainly have to look at every aspect of the organization. That's going to be personnel. Class sizes would likely go up.
What is the average class size K through 3 now?
Right now, in some of our buildings, we're at 28 and 30 children. That's too many children at the younger levels because we need to teach our children to read. We need to teach them literacy. Our teachers need to have time with our young people, especially, and not all of our children are in this situation, but especially with children who are coming into our schools who may not have had the experiences that some others. Some of our kids may not have had a lot of experiences with textbooks and books and people reading to them, and their vocabularies are not where they need to be for that beginning reading. So our teachers need to catch them up. And with our value-added data, we are finding that given the right resources, our teachers are doing a magnificent job of catching our children up. They just need the right resources, they need the right tools, and they need the right class size.
Ideal class size for K through 3 is?
We would say between 23 and 25. Mm-hmm. And if we could get it to 21, we would be
even
thrilled.
Better.
We'd
yeah.
be thrilled.
Now, also, this is a bond issue as well. It's combined operating levy and bond issue. The bond portion, according to press reports, $35 of the $275 we mentioned will go for the bond. Again, that's for an owner of a $100,000 assessed house. Bonds, we're used to bonds not costing any money. When the mayor comes and says, we're going to have these bonds for the city, you know, and they won't cost you anything, there'll be no taxation, et cetera. So tell me how this bond works and why the $35? What does that cover?
Well, actually, what we're asking, you know, our citizens to do is allow us to continue that collection because they're paying that now. So we're asking them to continue that collection. And what this will do is it will allow us to get 10 to 12 new buildings. You know, when we put the last bond issue on, we asked this community for the support for 34 new buildings. 23 of those are up. We expect the remainder of those to be up by the end of 2009, with the exception of the Afrocentric School, because it's right at the 7071 interchange, and we don't know what ODOT is going to do at this point. But all of those buildings are going to be up. We've replaced buildings, we've renovated buildings, and 23 of those are up. So it would get us 10 to 12 more of those replacement buildings, replace half our bus fleet. The average age of a bus in Columbus City Schools is 17 years old. And our mechanics have done a fabulous job with that, but eventually they're not going to be able to keep those buses running safely. It would allow us to spend about $11 million on technology. The average age of a computer in Columbus is 7 years old. And it would allow us also to upgrade our textbooks, about $9 million in textbooks. So this bond is not only buildings, you know, we can capitalize other expenditures like textbooks and buses and technology. And this is the first time we've done this in Columbus City Schools. While I know a lot of the suburban districts, that's how they keep their technology refreshed.
So why do some bonds cost the public money and some don't? How does that work?
Well, you know, I really don't know about the city's bond, but I know that we have to sell bonds, you know, out that, you know, we actually have to put them out there and you know, that's just where we are at this point.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about issue 75, a combined operating levy and bond issue for the Columbus Public Schools. We're at 614-292-8513. We're talking with Dr. Gene Harris, the Columbus Schools Superintendent. You can call in favor of the issue, opposed to the issue, or just to ask a question, 614-292-8513. The level of poverty has been going up in the district for families in the district. Huh?
That is correct. When I started as superintendent in 2001, we were at about 61% poverty. At this point, we're at about 75%. Our English as a second language population has grown. We have about 87 different languages represented in the district, and we have about 9,300 of our students who qualify for special needs. We don't see those as excuses at all. Even with all of that, we've continued to see our teachers and our principals and our staff, our parents, have continued to see gains with our children. Up to report card levels, graduation rate up. We're very pleased with that.
If poverty is growing in the district, does that mean your tax base is shrinking in terms of tax allocated to the Columbus schools or no?
Not necessarily, because basically our taxes are based on property wealth. Mm-hmm. And we are and that's both homeowners as well as businesses. And so obviously we'll keep an eye on that with foreclosures and all of that. Our CFO is keeping an eye on that. But it's based on property wealth, and that property wealth is you know, where those taxes come from.
Your five-year projection, you know, for your budget shows that sources of income for the district are going to be more or less stagnant.
That's
true. Expenses are going to continue to increase.
Which is one of the reasons that we have to cut $76 million mm-hmm. from the budget. You know, we have to stay within that. And if we have to make adjustments, you know, if we see that that our revenues even decline as opposed to staying stagnant, something changes at the state or, you know, something changes in our tax collections, then obviously we'll have to make those adjustments. You know, the board will have two decisions. Either we make reductions or we do have to come back to the voters sooner, although the board has already made the commitment to stay off the ballot for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. So if voters approve this levy, you're not going to come back for 4 more years.
That's what the promise is.
That's the promise. All right, let's go to our callers. Frank is first. Hello, Frank.
Yeah, I always wondering, you know, for the last several years, the student population of the city of Columbus has been declining.
Mm-hmm.
And the recent reports, and correct me if I'm wrong, it dropped down to around 50% of what used to be in the past. But the number of homes in the city of Columbus remain the same, and in fact, they are growing. So the tax base, what you're collecting from each home, is the same as what you were collecting when the student population was double that amount. But yet, you're still short. And I don't understand why is it when the tax base stays the same or even growing and the population is dropping, you're still short of money.
Well, and it's not short of money. It's that just as in your home, our expenses grow. And one of the things that we cannot do because of House Bill 920, you know, once you voted a levy, that those taxes can't grow with the valuation of the house. So it's not like you vote a levy and then because you know, a person's valuation increases that you get, you know, more money during the life of that levy. That will not happen.
Well, let me go on.
But our expenses do grow. And let me just talk a little bit about those expenses. As I said, we have students from 87 different countries. And we also have about 9,300 students who require special services. And we have about 75% of our students in poverty. That requires some additional resources. We have to lower class sizes for those kids who can't. Not all of them, but many of our children who don't speak English as a second language. We have to lower our class sizes so that we can teach them English while we're concurrently teaching them the content. The special needs students, some of our special needs students, because of their individual education plan that is required by the federal government, some of those children can cost up to $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 per pupil based on what their needs are. And we don't get a reimbursement that is a one-to-one on that child. We don't get 100% reimbursement on that child. So we have to go to the local property owners to ask them to help us.
I'm sorry, but didn't these expenses exist when the population was double the amount? These expenses you mentioned existed when the population was higher.
Not exactly in the same way.
Excuse me. You're closing so many schools, and the population goes down, and the tax base, not the evaluation, but the amount of homes are still paying their share of the taxes, and you're still short. That is what I don't understand.
Well, we're not short. What it is that our expenses are growing. I mean, so I think we just kind of see this differently. There are also additional requirements, sir, that we didn't have several years ago that we have today. For example, one of the things that we're planning for is the state legislature is now requiring new graduation requirements for our class of 2014. They're seventh graders right now. And what we have to do is make sure that those kids are prepared for 4 years of college prep math and 3 years of college prep science. So we're trying to get ready for that with the professional development for our teachers, as well as hiring some additional staff to make sure that's true. And as well, our community has said we want a robust curriculum for our kids that includes the arts and includes opportunities for them. So we're trying to make sure that we're preparing our students not just to graduate from high school, but it really is a kindergarten through grade 16, a kindergarten through college proposition that we're trying to make sure that our kids are ready to get there.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, Frank, thank you. 614-292-8513. And here's Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi, Fred and Gene. I'm just on my way to vote, but I just wanted to call about the bond issue question, Fred, that you asked.
Mm-hmm.
The city sets aside a portion of its income tax revenues to support the bonds that it issues, so that's why the city's bonds don't cost any money. And in Columbus, in 2000, the voters passed the bond issue to support construction, and the property values have grown enough and the payments on those bonds have reduced enough that they're able to do this issue, 75 bond issue, without increasing the millage dedicated to retiring those bonds.
Well, Jeff, you seem to know a bit about this. What are the expenses? Let's say the city bonds, you say they set aside a portion of the treasury to deal with expenses for the bonds. What are the expenses to an entity for bonds? Where does that money go?
Well, it's you borrow money and you build public works, and then you pay that money off along with an interest rate, just as you do perhaps
sure.
to buy a house or improve your house. The reason it's on the ballot is that actually by approving it on the ballot, you authorize the county to levy taxes to retire that debt if the city doesn't have enough money to do it. That makes the people who are buying the bonds willing to buy them at a lower interest rate. So that's the big deal for the city.
And so the expense is really the interest rate that you're paying the bondholders as the bonds mature.
Yes, a voted bond issue will generate a lower interest rate than one that's not voted.
Mm-hmm. Well, good, Jeff. Thanks for clearing that up. Appreciate the call. Dr. Harris, is there any way to express Frank was concerned about the growing needs or shortfalls, as he called them. Is there any way to express by what percent the total budget of the Columbus schools grows on an average annual basis?
We, from 2004 through 2008, the Board of Education committed to not allow its budget to grow more than 3% over the previous year. And that was really tough, and we had to exercise some discipline to make sure that we did that. And that's why those reductions that I talked about before, $100 million over projected growth, I mean, actually happened. We reduced staff by about 1,000. We closed schools. We did all of those things, still trying to make sure that we have a robust and a very good educational system. Some may say, well, why do you need all these things? This is really an economic issue for our community. If our children aren't educated, as well as we possibly can, and really prepared to go on for more education, because we know now that a high school diploma is not nearly enough for our children to be successful. If we're going to do that, then that means that we have to keep pace. But we only grew 3% over the previous year.
Mm-hmm. And we're at 614-292-8513 with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm just calling in to tell Dr. Harris that I voted already, and I did vote for the bond issue.
Thank you.
And I just hope everyone else supports the bond issue, because what Columbus, what Dr. Harris, the teachers, the school board, and the parents of Columbus mm-hmm. have been doing to Columbus Public Schools over the last several years, bringing the graduation up, bringing the successes to the schools, is very admirable, and I hope everyone supports the continuation.
Okay, Mike, thanks for your call. And let me ask you this, Dr. Harris. In any school system, what is the greatest percentage, I imagine, goes for salaries, right?
It does. I mean, we are a very people-driven operation. We have to have teachers in schools teaching students. I mean, there's not a single parent or a person in the public who would expect to go into school and not have the most qualified person there teaching children. We have to have principals, custodians. We have about 30,000 students that we transport. And here's an interesting piece, Fred, that the state law says that a child living within the Columbus City School District who attends a Columbus school or a charter school or a non-public school will be transported by the city school district. This is state law. And while we get reimbursement for that, again, you know, we still have to support that with additional dollars, too. So this is not only benefiting children in Columbus City Schools, but it's benefiting children in other school districts. But about 83% of our budget is personnel.
All right. Next call is Sean. Hello, Sean. You're with us.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Harris. Thanks for being on and talking about this. Appreciate
it.
I was just calling to see, is enrollment, you talked about over, I believe it was the last 4 years, that the budget's only grown about 3% a year, if I remember hearing that right. And I was just wondering, has enrollment increased by that level or more or less during that time?
No, we've had some enrollment declines, although we've seen some stabilization over the last couple of years. But no, our enrollment has not grown. What has grown is the types of students that we are educating. Again, our ESL, our English as a Second Language population has grown. Again, those are about 6% of our student population, or 8% of our student population. Our special needs population has grown. And again, those students are more expensive to educate. And we're trying to keep pace with being competitive with our salaries, with our teachers and our principals. I'm telling you, the suburban districts, and if I were out there, I'd do the same thing. They're becoming more and more diverse, and they are recruiting some of our best teachers and principals away from us. And they're paying higher. They're paying more. We do not have the highest salaries in the county. We have the most challenging population, but we do not have the highest salaries in the county.
What average beginning teacher for the system makes how much?
Just under $40,000.
Under $40,000 to start.
Mm-hmm.
And average retiring teacher after 30 years, let's say?
About $78,000.
Mm-hmm. Any further follow-up caller?
I think that was actually a good question on the and you said that was the average salary was $40,000?
No, the starting salary for our for our teachers.
Okay, I mean, I guess I know I was around the State House a lot during the during some of the past budgets, and statewide teacher salary average was $45,000. That was just a few years ago, I believe 2005. And you're saying the average starting salary in Columbus is $40,000?
Yes, yeah, starting salary. Yes.
Okay. Goodness. Well, all right. Well, that gives me a lot to think about between now and Tuesday.
Thank you.
All right,
Sean.
Thanks for your call. Dr. Gene Harris with us, Columbus Public Schools Superintendent, Issue 75. On your November Columbus ballot, a combined operating levy and bond issue. We're going to pause here for just some announcement. Then we'll back to you callers and with my guest at WOSU 820 NPR News.
John Updike calls fame a burden, but a little burden. Famous for the rabbit novels and The Witches of Eastwick, his latest book revisits his coven as the three women reconvene in Rhode Island 30 years later. I'm Neil Conan, the Widows of Eastwick. John Updike joins us to take your calls. Plus, we continue our series of closing arguments for the presidential candidates. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon at 2 o'clock, and today's Wednesday, so NPR's Political Junkie will also be stopping by on Talk of the Nation. WOSU and the Columbus Metropolitan Club will host a live presentation of Columbus on the Record tomorrow, October 30th, at WOSU at COSI. This is your chance to participate as host Mike Thompson and a panel analyze the races and issues for Ohio. This event is free and open to the public, but reservations are suggested. To register, call 292-9678 or go to our website, wosu.org/COTR. And in the weather forecast for today, cloudy skies, a high around 48 degrees, clear skies overnight and chilly, a low of 28. Currently, 39 degrees in downtown Columbus.
Support for WOSU comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club, where everyone is welcome to be a part of the live discussion at weekly luncheons. More information at www.columbusmetroclub.org.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour, we're learning more about Issue 75 on your Columbus ballot next Tuesday, the Columbus Schools Combined Levy and Bond Issue. Voters are being asked to approve an operating levy that will be used to restore teaching positions previously cut, to add an hour to middle school and high school instructional days, among other things. In that same Issue 75, voters are being asked to approve a bond issue to finance replacing an aging bus fleet and renovate schools. This combined levy and bond issue would cost the owner of $100,000 assessed house $275 extra per year. And we're going to find out more about Issue 75, and we're doing that with Columbus School Superintendent Gene Harris. And your questions, comments, favor, opposed to the levy, 614-292-8513. You can email comments or questions to openline at wosu.org. Jesse's next. Hi, Jesse.
Hi. I heard that there was a possibility of 7th and 8th graders being folded into the high school population. I was wondering if there was any truth behind that.
We had looked at that, and in fact, we've got a pilot that's going just in one school in the Linda McKinley area. And in fact, it's just not pulling 7th and 8th graders in. We actually have a science, technology, engineering, and mathematics program going there, or beginning there, that we are very excited about. We have partners with Honda and OSU and Ohio Dominican and several other colleges and universities and businesses in working through that curriculum with those schools. But, you know, what we're looking at, because of the Ohio core and the new graduation requirements, looking at whether or not this structure that would allow 7th grade teachers and high school teachers, middle school teachers and high school teachers to work together in a collaborative arrangement to make sure that our students learn these higher levels of mathematics and science that are going to be required with these new graduation requirements. So we do not have a plan for the entire district to go in this direction. It's probably going to be a community-by-community conversation. We've been having that conversation in the Linden community, and we're starting that pilot now, and we'll be able to share the results of that with the rest of the community as that goes forward.
Okay, Jesse?
I had a separate question.
Yeah.
We were mentioning that we are doing a lot of busing and things that involve out-of-district and private schools, and, you know, is there any possibility that, you know, since it's 75% of the students in Columbus Public Schools are in poverty, that somehow, you know, the suburbs of Columbus and the people that, you know, depend on the infrastructure of downtown can be taxed so that instead of just, you know, their property taxes all going into Upper Arlington and all these other schools that have so much more than we do, to make sure that, you know, the city that they live in, you know, they have their own suburb, but they're part of Columbus, and it seems like they should be helping out somehow.
Well, I certainly didn't mean to imply that we're busing Arlington or suburban students. I didn't mean to imply that at all. It's students who live within the Columbus City School District and are they and their parents are choosing to attend either charter schools that are not a part of Columbus City Schools or non-public schools that are not a part of Columbus City Schools. Then that's the requirement that we have is to transport those students. And obviously their parents are a part of the tax base also.
Mm-hmm. Jesse, thanks for your questions. Onward here to Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am a parent of a kindergartner this year, and we went through the painstaking process of deciding if we were going to stay in the Columbus Public Schools or mm-hmm. leave. And we made the choice to stay, and Dr. Harris, it has been the best decision of our life. Our daughter is getting a phenomenal education in the Columbus Public Schools. She is happy as can be to take the bus every day. The bus drivers are phenomenal. She is a kindergartner every day. It seems like she leaves something on the bus. They are very caring and wonderful. As a parent, though, my one concern is her school day doesn't start until 9:30 in the morning. She is up at 7:30, pulls out her book and just wants to write. And, you know, it's just a sponge this year. And I just want to encourage everybody. This is so important for our community. And I really want to hear a little bit more about if that 30 minutes is going to be added back to the elementary school day, because 9:30 is too late for...
I'm so glad you called, because I kept circling when Fred was saying adding the hour back to the middle and the high school to remember to work in that hour or that half hour would come back to the elementary also with the passage of this levy. And I'm thrilled that your daughter is having such a wonderful experience both at school and on her way to school, because that is really what we are striving for every single day, to let everybody know that everybody who touches our children is a potential teacher. Everyone who works in the district is a potential teacher for that child. But yes, that extra time will come back. That additional time, when this levy passes next week, will come back for both elementary, for all three levels, elementary, middle, and high.
It is so important. I really encourage people to vote for this. This is our community, and we have to put resources into our community.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Dr. Harris, according to press accounts, you will restore an hour to middle school and high school instructional days. You'll add an hour. Where is that hour being added?
Well, it's back to the children. The children are actually starting later. The teachers never did, when we reduced the school day, that allowed us to reduce staff members in an orderly way so that students weren't in study halls or unsupervised, that kind of thing, by reducing the student schedule also. So the teacher's schedule stayed the same. Mm-hmm. So what would happen is our start times would be earlier.
What are they now?
Right now, pardon me, at elementary school, it's 9:30. At many of our middle and high schools, it's 8:23. And so what would happen is the high schools and the middle schools would start again at 7:30 or 8 o'clock for the middle schools, and then the elementary schools would start at 9.
Okay. By the way, a previous caller talked about, he said 75% of Columbus students are in poverty, come from poverty families. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And it's grown. I mean, it actually has grown over the last several years. And when we talk about being in poverty, that means that they qualify for free and reduced price meals at the school. And sometimes, you know, there are families who are working and it's just their income levels. Other times, you know, families who have had medical issues or whatever it is and are unemployed at that time, but it's the level of their income. And so that does complicate. That means that, you know, sometimes that means that lives are complicated. But, you know, I have never met any parent, regardless of their socioeconomic level, who didn't want the best for their child, who didn't want high-level learning for their child. And we do not see that as an excuse. We just understand it, that it is a challenge. And so things like universal breakfast are one of the ways that we meet that challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that there's certain things that we need to do in partnerships with the community on certain issues are ways that we meet the challenges that our students face.
How many students in the system right now?
We have about 53,000 students in our system.
When 4 years ago, when you came back for another, let me, and previously 4 years ago, how many students in the schools?
I think we're down about 9,000 students. So we were in the low 60s at that time.
Your five-year plan projects, does it an 11% decrease for the decrease in student population?
We do, yes.
Many of them going to charter schools and private schools, is that right?
We do, and we also know that the number of live births are declining. You know, people aren't having, in some cases, aren't having as many children. So yes, we do, and we will certainly make sure that our budget meets that. You know, that the number of schools that we have open certainly does align with our enrollment and what we need to offer our children.
Of the 11% I should say, who you project leaving the system in the next 5 years, or the decrease at least in the total student population, what percentage of that 11% would you say are people actually leaving to go to charter schools and private schools?
Yeah, I don't have the exact percent, but I know that there are three things that we're seeing. We're seeing students who are actually leaving, you know, moving out of the area, mm-hmm. perhaps moving to suburban communities, moving to another state, families that are moving. But we also have students who are attending charters and vouchers. And the majority of the students who are leaving the district, at least at this point, have been to go to voucher and charter schools.
Mm-hmm. Is that – so there's significant competition for you, really.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How are you meeting that competition?
Well, several ways. Some of our new programs that we have, you know, one of the things that we will do as a result of this levy is to expand our theme-based school programs. We have science, technology, engineering, and mathematics clubs, STEM clubs in our middle schools and high schools. The new buildings, what we are finding in our new buildings, in the majority of our new buildings, once the children and the faculty move back in, our population begins to increase. We've had some where we've had to cut off the enrollment because it's been so full. So we're seeing that. You know, our high-quality programs and the teachers, I'm telling you, I can't say enough about our teachers and our principals and the leadership that they are taking in their schools. I would bet that parent that called with that kindergarten student also would talk to you long and hard about what's going on with that kindergarten teacher, what's going on with that principal. So those kinds of things, the person-to-person kind of contact, better customer service, better response to parents, new programs, expanding existing already high-quality programs. I know that we have talked about the Indianola Informal Program. We've expanded that program as well as the Berwick Program. All of those things are designed to provide parents with maximum opportunities.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Carlos is on the air. Hello, Carlos.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have a question for Superintendent Harris, and I hope it pertains to what she's talking about. It's about the EdChoice program. With all the cuts that we're going to have, I was wondering if the EdChoice program is going to be compromised, and if so, is there an alternative? Like, for my case, I live in an endangered scholastic zone, and my child cannot get a private education because I didn't have the money to afford it. Thank God I found out about this EdChoice program, and that gave me the opportunity to have him right now in a private school. So as I was saying, my question is pertaining to that. If there is another alternative, I would like to know about it, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. EdChoice means a voucher. What does that mean?
And I think that's what he's talking about, that he's talking about the voucher program, which we don't control the mm-hmm. voucher program. The only impact that I can see that might be relative to Columbus City schools, if the levy doesn't pass, is whether or not we are able to continue busing at the levels, you know, providing bus transportation at the levels that we do. You know, I talked about the fact that we are required to transport students who are in charter and private schools who live in the Columbus City Schools District. The law says that we only really have to transport students who are in grades kindergarten through 8 who are more than 2 miles away from home. And they would have to be transported. But we also transport high school students. If our levy doesn't pass, we'd have to look at high school transportation. And if I'm not transporting Columbus City Schools high school students, then I don't have to transport private and charter school students. Mm-hmm. So that's the only impact that I can think of. Otherwise, we don't control – the state controls the EdChoice program. We do not.
All right. Hello, Justin. You're on the air.
Hi, Ms. Harris. or Mrs. Harris, excuse me. I was wondering about the facility use of some of these, facilities that that they would get. My parents live right next to a school, Columbus Public School, mm-hmm. and I'm just kind of wondering, are we using these facilities, you know, I mean, I know they're used during school hours and stuff, but, you know, as far as like senior groups and meetings and just kind of using them as meeting halls and stuff.
Okay, so what's the after hours use in it?
And what's kind of the status of that? And I know we've been kind of reducing facility, you know, the number of facilities we have.
Got
stuff.
It. I understand.
So the facilities that are no longer being used by every day for school children, in some cases we've leased those out. In some cases, some of those buildings will come down because they're on property that, you know, we need to expand the playground space. We build a new school there and we need to expand the playground space. And so we do have a facilities use kind of plan, you know, for all of our schools. As far as the after-hours use, they are certainly available in some cases for lease. In some cases, we can do it without charging for community groups to use. And the caller can call 365-5000 if they're interested in that, and we can take them through the steps that they would need to take if they wanted to use our building.
Mm-hmm. So it is possible, sometimes for a fee?
Absolutely. Sometimes for a fee, and sometimes, you know, because we have other things going on in the building, we don't have to charge a fee. Mm-hmm. At the same time.
Okay, Justin, thanks for your call. We have an email here from Robbie. He says, isn't it true that charter schools only get half of the tax dollars that the public schools get? And also, he says, if my personal budget is overspent, would it be good for me to increase my spending 3% each year? If you are over budget, shouldn't you get your budget in line first?
Sure. Let me start with the second part. Some of those are things that we can't control, utilities, gasoline, those kinds of things. And indeed, as I've said before, we continue to reduce our budget. But we also know that there are demands for world-class education. We need to educate our children at the highest levels that we possibly can. That takes an investment. It certainly does. And then I've forgotten what the other part of the question was.
The other part of the question is, isn't it true that charter schools only get half of the tax dollars?
Yeah, and I think there, you know, CFOs will talk about this. And I think what he's talking about is they get the per pupil expenditure from the state, and do they also get the property tax amount that you would get locally? Some CFOs would say yes, they get a piece of the local property taxes. Other CFOs would say no, they only get what's from the state. So I think that's worthy for another conversation for another day in bringing that forward. Because, again, we've had various CFOs who have seen that differently.
Interpret the numbers differently?
Interpret the numbers differently. You know, I think the average per pupil expenditure for the state is about $5,600. That follows the charter school students. We know at least, you know, all of that follows the charter school student. I think his question is, does any of the local property tax amount go mm-hmm. also?
Yeah.
And my understanding is that it doesn't, but I've heard other CFOs say that it does.
Some of it does. Okay.
Yeah.
Kelly's on the line. Hello, Kelly.
Great job, Dr. Harris.
Thank you.
You know, this is not new knowledge to you, but, you know, there's many people, you know, who've gas, electric, utilities, food, and et cetera. You know, their utilities have been cut off and whatnot, but they still have an interest in the public schools and would like to support it. Now, while I know you're definitely interested, you know, in this bond issue, you know, with money and whatnot, but is there any way that, you know, people who really have a vested interest in supporting the schools who just can't afford to another penny on the levy, while their computers are 7 years old, their furnace may be 30,
sure.
and they might not have a computer, is there any way that they can invest some sweat equity in the system, like with those the ratio of 28 to 1? Is there any way that, you know, maybe they can volunteer or
oh, yes.
something? Because I just can't see someone saying, well, I don't want to support the public schools. I can see someone saying, I can't support it because I don't have money enough to support myself. And I'll take my call, answer up there. Thank you.
Thank you. And yes, there are additional ways to support the schools. And one notable one is Project Mentor. And if the caller could go to the website, projectmentorcolumbus.org, projectmentorcolumbus.org, she would see that there's a way for her to sign up to volunteer to be a mentor to our students. Spend an hour a week with a young person. I'm a mentor in a school. An hour a week with our young people, encouraging them to stay in school, to graduate, to stay focused. And we would love to have community members doing that. Fred, I want to go back to that last question also about the dollars that follow students who go to charter schools. Mm-hmm. So they get the basic state aid, which I think is somewhere around $5,600. But also, if that student happens to be a student with special needs, you know, that those dollars follow that student. Also, those extra dollars for that extra support, as well, if they are in a vocational program, that also would follow those students.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Harris, you yourself are a mentor, huh?
I am a mentor, and I love it. I really do. I'm at Eastmore High School. This is my second year as a mentor with my young person.
Mm-hmm. And what are you teaching that person?
Well, actually, what we do is we spend an hour together. This is a collaboration between Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Columbus City Schools. Our lead sponsor has been the Nationwide Foundation to provide additional resources so that we could go forward with this program. But what we're doing is talking about her future. What is it that she wants to do? It's a non-threatening, it's not a tutorial, but this is a non-threatening hour a week conversation, working with her on planning, on looking ahead, on staying motivated. If she wants to talk about she's having some trouble in science, last year she was having a little bit of trouble in science. I talked to teachers about perhaps, or her principal, about additional resources that she might need and where we might find those. But it's just a non-threatening way to have someone in the community saying, you can do this. You know, there's so many opportunities out there. And to expose her perhaps to things and conversations and ideas that she may not have been exposed to before.
Okay. We're joined by Phyllis. Hi, Phyllis. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Harris and Fred. Thank you for the show. I wanted to tag on to the woman that called in with her kindergartner. I have a Columbus Public, Columbus City School senior, and made the same choice in part based on my political commitment and in part based on resources. But I wanted to encourage you to maybe take an opportunity to look at neighborhood schools.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Berwick, and as you know, we really, really want our kids included. As a way to capture support for the levy, because I think you can garner a lot of enthusiasm. Working with the Civic, I know we've lost some city residents based on school issues, you know, getting perhaps a second child in once they've gotten the first one in, those kinds of things. But to the extent that you're able, that might be a way for you to affect that. And then also the designation for homeschools, for middle schools and high schools.
And every one of our children do have a designated assigned school. And I understand what you're saying about the Berwick community. Berwick is an alternative or a magnet school, and so it draws students from various parts of the city, and students are not assigned there by neighborhood. But
correct.
Part of our strategic plan is called strengthening a system of good neighborhood schools. And we're looking at that. We're looking at student assignment, what makes sense. And we'll be having some public conversations with parents about that. And in the Berwick area, we already have plans to make some changes there.
Excellent. Because if you talk about that in this last, what do we have, 6 days?
We have 6 days, yes,
ma'am. That might encourage, get people enthusiastic and behind you supporting this levy, you know.
I understand.
Effort. But I do appreciate the city schools, and you guys have done a great job. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phyllis. 614-292-8513, talking about Issue 75 on your Columbus ballot next Tuesday with Dr. Gene Harris, the superintendent of the Columbus Public Schools. Tell me overall how Columbus Public Schools' performance is measured and what improvements you've made and where you need to go. I think you, by the year 2012, 90% student graduation rate, you're guaranteeing that?
That's the plan. That is the plan. That's the goal. the way we're – I think we're primarily measured on our graduation rate and the quality of our graduates. And so that's what we're working on, and that's how we're measuring ourselves. We've got a goal, as you have said, that by 2012 we want 90%, at least 90% of our students graduating. We're well on our way to that goal. When we set it, we were at 55%. Now we're over 70%. And we anticipate for the class of 2008 that that percentage will go up even higher. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to that information back from the State Department. The other way that we're measured is through the state report card, a series of tests in core areas, reading, writing, science, mathematics, and social studies. And the state looks at those numbers every year and ranks the school district. We were in the lowest ranking academic emergency. Now we're in continuous improvement. We've been in continuous improvement for 2 years, and we have seen steady improvements over the last 8 years. We also look at our scholarship acquisition. In 2001, our students earned about 21, our graduates of 2001 earned about $21 million in scholarship grant and aid. The class of 2008 has earned about $57.6 million in scholarship grant and aid. So those are some. We're also, we'll be working with the board on some additional measures of improvement for our school district. While I think we've made some really notable and laudable improvement. And again, I give all that credit to our teachers and our principals and our staff members that are working out there with our kids every day. But we still have a long way to go. And these investments will help us to continue that. Last thing I'll say on that, Fred, is this is not only a student investment, this is an economic investment for this community. We know that a well-educated young person is going to be far more productive and far less a drain on the community from mental health services or even maybe being incarcerated or any of those kinds of services than young people that are highly educated.
$57 million in scholarship aid earned by graduating students.
Yes.
How does that compare with other districts of about the same size of Columbus? Do
you,
we know?
We have not made that comparison. We keep comparing ourselves against ourselves, trying to get better and trying to make sure that we push it up as high as we possibly can. So I don't have that comparison, but I do know that we have tripled the amount of scholarship grant and aid that our students have earned over the last several years.
We have an email from Lori here. I'm a parent, she says, with a first grader at Columbus Public Schools. I'm active in the PTA and want the best education for my child. We're very happy with our elementary school, but we've experienced large class sizes. It is very hard on one teacher
yes.
to have 30 kids in what's usually a small room. She says it's essential that this levy passes, says Lori, to keep class sizes at a manageable level, to help teachers educate our children, and to fund facility improvements. I can imagine 30 is a teacher wanting to give individual attention to students as well. I mean, that's hard with 30
It would
students.
Be very difficult. And first grade and kindergarten, we've had a kindergarten parent called in first grade. Those are critical literacy years where we're teaching reading and the foundations about mathematics and the world around you and how you connect to all of that. Our teachers need the time to do it. I think we've got the quality in our teachers. It's a matter of having the right tools to support them. Class size is one of those tools.
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth, hi, you're on the air.
I voted early as well, and I already voted for this in favor of this. And I wanted to mention that because I would encourage people, even who do not have an vested interest in the Columbus Public Schools, to go ahead and vote for it, but then hold the schools accountable.
Mm-hmm.
In the districts where the schools are known to be very, very good, they vote in favor of money for the schools, and then they hold them accountable, and that's the way to go. My own children are grown, and their children are also not in the public school system, so... we truly don't have a vested interest in it, but it's just not realistic to think that you can complain about issues and then not do something about it, and I would encourage everyone to vote in favor of it, even if they don't see themselves as using it, because they need the money, and then on the other side of the ledger, hold them accountable.
Okay, Elizabeth, thanks for your statement. I guess the last levy in 2004 passed with about, what, 55% of the vote?
About 53-54% of the vote. And in that levy, we had some accountability measures. We said we wouldn't come back for 4 years. We said we would hold our spending growth to over the previous year to 3%. We said we'd make some educational improvements. We said we would expand the Audit and Accountability Committee, and that means bringing corporate financial experts on to work with us on operations and finance. And we've done all of those things. So I agree with the caller about accountability. We report out to the public about the progress our students are making. We say when we're not making the progress that, you know, that we think we ought to make. So I totally agree with the previous caller.
All right. And we are out of time. It's issue 75 on your Columbus ballot next Tuesday, the combined operating levy and bond issue for the Columbus Public Schools. Dr. Jean Harris, school superintendent, thanks for being with us this hour.
Thanks for having me, Fred.
And when we come back, Fritz Schurin joins us from the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago. We're going to talk about political and public opinion polling on listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 is NPR News.